Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number three, our third and final here on this Wednesday on the Early Line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens.
Yeah.
Getting you ready for our third and final hour on TEL. We'll talk a lot of college basketball later in the hour with John Rothstein, and we will ask a big picture question for each of our two conference championship games on Sunday. A big question, whether it be a matchup, a storyline, or a narrative to break down for conference championship weekend in the National Football League. A ton to get to here, DRS, in this third and final hour that starts with a baseball conversation. How about that?
Yeah, this baseball conversation actually going to be really good. It's a great question. Sorry. I'm interested to see what those final, you know, statistics are on who, what, and people voted for. But I got to tell you, man, football season is winding down, which is a shame. But I always say this, too, because what am I going to do with myself after football is over? College basketball is phenomenal at this time of year. It's going to be great. The NBA is going to be starting off and saying, you know what, we're getting towards the playoffs here. Hockey, the same thing. And baseball, before you can blink, you're going to be looking at pitchers and catchers in spring training baseball. We will be saved. But something special always, whether your team is in it or not, that AFC-NFC Championship Sunday usually delivers unbelievable bangers, whether it's great football games or ridiculously bad calls like we saw with the Rams and the New Orleans Saints just a few years ago. It's one of the great days in football, and I'm looking forward to it, so let's go.
That would have been a lot of fun on the Monday reaction to Conference Championship Sunday on the early line on that PI call. That would have been a lot of fun to break down with Donnie Wrightside. I think this is going to be fun as well. The LA Dodgers, who spent a ton of money last offseason, are continuing to spend a ton of money. Of course, they won a World Series this past season in MLB as well. It has led to some offseason conjecture around the Dodgers and Major League Baseball as a whole. Are the Dodgers breaking baseball because of all they are willing to spend each and every year? It was a question that not only Donnie and I had to debate, but we had to hear from you. Let's do that right now and fade the public. At Sports Grid on Twitter, are the Los Angeles Dodgers, quote, ruining baseball? Two simple answers for you, yes or no. More than 365 votes on this Fade the Public poll right now. And Donnie, it's not as clear of a margin as perhaps some of the social media conjecture has been, but still, most of the public, around 55-56%, saying yes, the Dodgers are, quote, ruining baseball.
Yeah, this is a great poll here because you are looking at the split as what we're seeing, 55% to 44%. And I'm surprised by that. The reason being is most people just get angry and be like, the Dodgers are cheating. They're ruining baseball. It's a wrap at this point. Now, for me, I actually voted no. I'm a Philadelphia Phillies fan. I hate the fact that the Dodgers are signing all of these players. I hate the fact that they have the best pitching lineup in baseball, the best 1-9 in baseball, and the best bullpen in baseball, and they just won a World Series, and they're probably not done signing players and or trading for players during the season. But hear me out on this, which is why I voted for no. I think they're doing a disservice to the sport, yes. But understand this, in any walk of life, if you ever are, and glorious to you if you are, a fantastic gambler, which means you can walk into a casino and you can count cards effectively. Hear me out on this. And you go in there, Ben, okay, and say, you know what? I'm a high-limit player. Day number one, I won $300,000. Day number two, I did the same. Day number three, I did the same. Do you know what that casino does? We don't want your business here anymore. You're going to be banned throughout this casino and whatever city you're going to play. We're sending your picture in. Oh, you got away with $900,000, though. But think about this being a smart gambler. You walk in and take the casino for $300,000 day number one. You go back and lose $175,000 of that in day number two and go home. They'll probably let you come back as this guy's probably getting a little bit lucky and you can continue on your winning ways. So what I'm saying is, if the Dodgers went out and just didn't sign every free agent, every big name and snuck in World Series, hey, that's just a great organization. But I understand how baseball works is now you're going to get the other owners upset by doing this. You're going to get players upset by doing this. You're going to get fan bases upset. So I actually think the Dodgers are doing baseball a service where you might see, let's just say, Ben, if the Dodgers do have that perfect season, which we know sometimes doesn't play out. And the reason being is you say, okay, they go out this season, they just get injured, they're not as good, they weren't hot in the playoffs. It happens. We've seen that before. But if the Dodgers run away, and I'm talking about, Ben, 115 plus wins this season and roll into the playoffs, baseball and those low market owners and mid market owners are going to have a problem with this, is saying we just can't compete because baseball is messed up as is, where maybe the Pittsburgh Pirates are saying, like, love the Dodgers signing all these guys. Case in point being is, you know what's going to happen at this point? We get more money from the luxury tax. It's bad for baseball and it's bad for business, but they're doing it so overwhelmingly, Ben, it's going to help baseball in 2 to 3 years when they lock them out and put in a salary cap and a salary floor. So everybody, like the NFL, like baseball, like the NBA and hockey, that can work into your favor. So I don't think they're ruining baseball. They're actually going to help baseball get to the happy medium that most of us want.
I think that is beautifully said, DRS. I voted no as well. I don't believe the Dodgers are ruining baseball. They're not doing anything illegal. They're not working in some ethical gray area. They are taking advantage of what the actual rules in the letter of the law allow them to do. You want to get mad at somebody? Get mad at Rob Manfred. You want to get mad at somebody? Get mad at the MLB Players Association. You want to get mad at an ownership group? Don't look out in sunny Southern California. Yell at your ownership group in Pittsburgh, in Baltimore, in Toronto,
Miami,
in Detroit, wherever that in Miami, wherever you want to point the finger, look internally. Don't get mad at the Dodgers. You want to get mad at people? Get mad at the structure of MLB that does not have a revenue sharing model so that a smaller market team can feel exactly like that. A very small market. The Dodgers aren't doing anything wrong. You might not like it, but no, the Dodgers are not ruining baseball. Donnie, I think you are also onto something there, that in a few years, I should dive more into this, and maybe you'll hear it on Newswire from our MLB insider, Craig Mish. I do believe the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, is up next year, 2 years. Maybe Joe Friso, our producer, can dive into that as well. I do believe there are going to be changes based on what the Dodgers have done these previous 2-3 off seasons to the upcoming CBA that is going to restrict the deferments and all the payments we have seen the Dodgers take advantage of the last 2 years. December 1st, 2026 is when that current collective bargaining agreement does expire. Could it lead to a lockout? We shall see. Joe Friso, great work there. But this is why people are mad at the Dodgers. They signed Shohei Ohtani last offseason for all of the deferred money. They add Yoshi Yamamoto. They add Teoscar Hernandez. They win a World Series. This year, they have added Roky Sasaki. That wasn't a blockbuster deal. Sasaki made his decision to come to Major League Baseball before the age of 25 and then signs a minor league baseball deal, but with a larger signing bonus, of course, in L.A. They get Blake Snell. That's a big deal. 5-year, $182 million contract. Tanner Scott, 4 years, $72 million. Kirby Yates yesterday. Michael Conforto. And I'm not even going to try to pronounce that last name. Ho-Song Kim. I don't want to mess that up too
good
much.
Enough.
But DRS, this is why people are mad at the Dodgers, because they continue to exploit, not loopholes, mind you, the actual rules and regulations of which Major League Baseball is constructed.
By the way, Also, the NFL, which could have easily iced out the smaller markets like Green Bay, but teams like the New York Giants said, we want this league to be prosperous. We will share revenue along with it. That needs to happen. Also understand this. A behemoth was being born in the 1990s. That was Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys marketing their team, making more money than everybody else. They won the championship in 1995. The salary cap finally put it in 94. We haven't heard from the Dallas Cowboys because you just can't outspend and buy championships in the National Football League. We need some sort of semblance in baseball because it's not about the Dodgers winning. It's about that small market team and you being a fan going like, why should I care anymore?
Beautifully said. More TEL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We are now just a few days away from conference championship weekend and conference title Sunday in the National Football League. As we have shared much earlier in the show, this day, Wednesday, for teams each and every week in the NFL playing on a Sunday slate, very important. First full day of practice, guys back on the field. If somebody was banged up or injured, you pay attention to that practice report. Limited participant, a DNP, did not practice. Full participant, all of that will set the outlook for an upcoming weekend. As will we, DRS, with one or maybe two big questions for both of our conference championship matchups. Let's start with the marquee event, Sunday night inside at Arrowhead Stadium. And once again, two very familiar foes come NFL postseasons, the Buffalo Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs. The Chiefs at home, just a short point and a half favorite, but the money line only by a couple of cents, but the money line is working the Chiefs way. It was minus 120 at open. Now it's minus 126. In a game that we expect to be ultra competitive, those margins are worth noting in a total at 47 and a half. First big question to you, Don, on the right side. What's more likely as you stare at that total of 47 and a hook, an offensive shootout or a defensive struggle?
I wouldn't believe it's the over, but we know the stakes of the game sometimes change. But also understand this, the Jekyll and Hyde that the Kansas City Chiefs are. Is it so simple to say this to the answer, Ben? If we go into that game and Buffalo goes right down the field for opening kickoff 7-0, we are in a shootout. Why? Because Kansas City are like, oh, we got to score now? Of course we're going to score now. But if Kansas City takes the opening kickoff and they score a touchdown, I go under because like, oh, look, Kansas City scored. Now they know they don't actually have to score for another 3 to 4 possessions because the game will be close. It feels like that's the way Kansas City is. I'm waiting for a team to press Kansas City. I'm waiting again to see Kansas City go down 14-0. It wasn't long ago where they were in the playoffs. I think it was the Houston Texans who put them down multiple touchdowns and like, oh, this is the time. And before the half, they already had the lead back. That's what I understand about them because they're such good on defense now, which is something in the past couple of years maybe you couldn't rely on so much. They've turned into a defensive maven over there where you start to say, we can dictate the game. We have the best quarterback. We'll make enough plays to win this because our defense will rescue us even if we're not playing so great. I just need to see if Buffalo can press them. This game is going to be so much fun, one for the ages at this point. But it's simple for me. I want to believe that the over is in play at 47.5. It's going to be cool conditions. Oh, what? Is it a dome team in Buffalo that missed something? No. Both of these teams are built for cold weather and played multiple big games in cold weather. They both have weapons that can get down the field. I just need to see the MO of Buffalo saying, you know what? We're going to be ultra aggressive and force Kansas City into this game on offense to score. Because Kansas City, when they want to, they will score. When they don't have to, they're just fine with 21-20 at the end of the ball game.
And so for me, DRS, that's what I think is the answer to the question. What is more likely? Until I see the Kansas City Chiefs knocked off their perch of winning the AFC, and especially by this group, the Buffalo Bills, what to me is most likely is the Kansas City Chiefs playing in yet another Super Bowl, a third consecutive in making NFL history. And thus, what is more likely is the Chiefs being in control of this game and keeping it under that total of 47 and a half. More likely, doesn't mean that I won't bet the over or think the over comes through on Sunday evening inside Arrowhead. Just more likely, I would lean more to points at a premium. The Chiefs, each of the past two seasons, have been a top five scoring defense in the NFL. And they only allowed 12 points in total to the Texans last week. It was that safety that Matt Araiza, KC's punter, took in the final 15 seconds of regulation that even got Houston to 14. So more likely, defensive struggle over an offensive shootout. But still, I think we do flirt with that total of 47.5. Second big question, is this matchup, because we are about to see it, in the NFL playoffs for a fourth time in the last five seasons, is this matchup the best rivalry in professional sports right now?
I mean, basketball doesn't have any rivalries, right? If we play it, hockey, there's too many games in a season. So when you're looking at this rivalry right now, I'm going to have to say yes, because in the sports, like, hey, the Steelers and the Ravens usually give us a pretty good fight. That's, you know, okay, we expect that two games a season, but at the highest level right now, with two quarterbacks playing at MVP levels and the stakes that we've not only seen in the past, but the expectations of the future, I'm going to buy that. We saw it in the regular season. Was it a big game? Yes. Did Buffalo win? Absolutely. But we've also seen epic playoff games where one team like the Buffalo Bills easily should have beaten Kansas City based on time and score, let it slip through their fingers and not get a stop in overtime, not get the football and lose. So I'm going to buy that. When you can tell me that Buffalo and Kansas City are lining up in the playoffs, sign me up, because we're expecting an epic performance out of both of these teams. I'll buy that. I think it's right. I do.
So I don't know if I buy it fully. I don't know if I'm going to say no. I kind of agree with your sentiment, DRS, in professional sports. Maybe there's more hatred in hockey. I don't know the NFL probably as intimately as I should to have an understanding of that. In baseball, are there a lot of hated rivalries? Everybody hates the Dodgers. The Yankees kind of hate the Astros. I think even the historic rivalry against the Red Sox has lost a little bit of its steam. Where in basketball do you even look right now? Maybe the Warriors and the Cavs a decade ago, but not necessarily at this moment. And in terms of playoff success, in seeing each other each and every season, I think the answer is yes. I don't know if there's a ton of hatred or vitriol between the two organizations. Yeah. The quarterbacks, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, seem to like each other and have a ton of success. I actually think the Chiefs, as a fan base, hate the Bengals more than they do the Bills. And part of the reason is, you saw it right there, KC owns Buffalo. Just a matter of fact. They have played each other three times in the playoffs in the last 4 years. Kansas City has won all three. They have covered in all three. Sure, the Bills have won four or five regular season meetings since the 2020 campaign, but that's all Buffalo has. And when it comes to getting the last laugh, Kansas City has been triumphant each and every time. If that continues, that's going to be a very tough narrative for the Bills to ever change. Their playoff nemesis in Kansas City, ousting them from the postseason four of the previous 5 years. Some news around the NFL, big time, next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Some big news out of the National Football League within the last 5 to 10 minutes or so as the coaching carousel continues to spin. Of course, we'll talk big picture questions for that NFC Championship matchup between the two divisional foes, the Eagles and the Commanders, in just mere moments. But DRS, one of the hottest names in the coaching carousel this offseason, Liam Cohen, offensive coordinator for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers after his first year in Tampa. Buccaneers OC Liam Cohen is taking himself out of the running for the Jaguars head coaching job to stay in Tampa on a new contract that will now place him among the highest paid coordinators in the NFL. Baker and the Bucs retain their OC. That's from ESPN's Adam Schefter in the last 10 minutes. There was some conversation, DRS, in the last 48 hours around Liam Cohen that he was on track rather shortly to become the next head coach in Jacksonville. Now, that is not going to be the case. Great news for the Buccaneers. It would seem the Jaguars back to the drawing board.
Yeah, there's a couple different ways that you can look at this, too, because number one, when most people see that, awesome, he didn't want that job. But we understand how the professional ranks work, where your agent's getting feedback like, hey, buddy, I don't even know if you're actually the leader right now in the clubhouse. Do you really love this job? I can go right back to Tampa and get you more money, which is probably what happened. And also understand this. Money is so good now for offensive coordinators that are really good at their job, like Liam Cohen, where why would you do this to yourself if it's a situation that might not put you in the best light? And you say, I might only have one chance, Ben, to strike and get a head coaching job in the NFL. As long as I'm happy where I'm at, I'm going to get a pay increase. Love working with Baker Mayfield. My offense is going to be good in a division that we can win. Maybe I can then press it down. Ben Johnson did similar things where maybe he thought he wasn't ready or the perfect organization for him wasn't there. Goes back, has a lot of success, picks the organization he wants, and gets the job. We've also seen it go backwards, and particularly from a Tampa Bay offensive coordinator perspective as well. Do you remember back when Brian Ruffich, hey, you know what? I could probably be the coach for Jacksonville now. I don't like that. I'm going to press it down and think I can get a job somewhere else. I don't even know if that guy's even in football at this point. So be careful what you wish for as your perfect landing spot, because that opportunity might not get up again. Right. But I do like people that bet on themselves. And if Liam Cohen really said, you know what, I think I'm going to get this job, but I don't think it's right, let me go back to Tampa, there is something to be said about that as well. So big win for Tampa, because continuity usually wins the day. And I'm sure Baker Mayfield and that offense are extremely happy, which includes Todd Bowles, that he's happy to come back as an OC, not a head coach. I like that, but there are extracurriculars, and maybe you shouldn't pass up an opportunity that might not come back your way again.
No doubt about it. Ben Johnson was the hottest name in the coaching carousel last year, and still was this season. Liam Cohen, not maybe the hottest, but did seem to be the front runner to win that head coaching job in Duval County. From a Buccaneers standpoint, Tampa has won the NFC South now four consecutive seasons. Baker Mayfield is their guy. They are going to return a lot of pieces, and they don't have to pay as many people this offseason as they did in the previous one, at least to my knowledge. Having that consistency and the congruency of quarterback and OC, who were incredibly stout this year together, really exciting for the Buccaneers, who I believe, as we've talked some future prices in what we speculate will be those odds for a new NFL season, Tampa, unlike this past offseason when it was the Falcons, the Buccaneers should be the favorites to win the NFC South entering next season. Now, to the losers of this conversation, at least on paper, that would be the Jacksonville Jaguars. I believe there is a lot of skepticism of the best and brightest head coaching candidates trying to work under Trent Baalke right now in Duval County. So, DRS, now that we've seen Ben Johnson, who was also rumored for Jacksonville, make his way to Chicago, the Raiders still in the running for a head coach as well. The Jags with Trevor Lawrence. Who do you think that next head coach, if you had to speculate right now, is going to be in Jacksonville?
I know they really liked Robert Saleh from the minute they interviewed him, and you're getting that good feedback out there. But also understand this. You did bring up a great point here, because when a head coach comes in, the most important relationship he has is not necessarily with the owner or his quarterback. It's with the general manager. You want to have that vision when you come, like, you know, we're on the same page. We're going to grow this football team together. Now you're having a general manager, which hasn't worked out all that successfully, has brought in some talent to Jacksonville, but it seems like he has the ear to the owner much more than you will, which means if things start to go south, like they've done multiple times with multiple coaches in Jacksonville, who keeps winning those battles? It's the general manager. And sometimes you'll see that as, I don't know if that's great job safety, because I don't know if I'm getting a person in the room that's helping me, or I'm getting a guy that's alienating me in that, saying, you know what, I just hired the wrong guy again. You know me, I'll get this right. Fire the coach, we'll make it right with the next guy around the block. That's what might be holding it back the most in Jacksonville.
You would think it would be an attractive landing spot. It really might not be. And don't forget the interesting caveat of the head coach reporting into the owner in Shad Khan. That's a little bit strange as well. NFC Championship game preview next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The big questions for the NFC Championship game on Sunday in Philadelphia between divisional foes from the NFC East, the Eagles and the Commanders. The line opened early on Saturday night, or on Sunday rather, at 4.5 in favor of Philly. It has ballooned DRS to nearly a touchdown, a 6.5-point spread in favor of the Birds. A total that is the exact same at this moment for our AFC title game that will follow. 47.5. So as we break down this game, we'll continue to give out picks, best bets, and previews throughout the remainder of this week. But we ask the big questions. Big question number one, how relevant is the Commanders Week 16 win at home in Landover against the Eagles when you start to break down this game?
It's still relevant. There's a football game they played. Yes, Jalen Hurts got knocked out in that first quarter, which changed a lot of things, which you know the Eagles are built. If Jalen Hurts is mobile and can make plays by himself, it makes it much harder to defend Saquon Barkley, who hit multiple home runs in that game. But understand this. Jalen Hurts didn't play defense, and that was a team where the Philadelphia Eagles had multiple double-digit leads and couldn't hold on because Jaden Daniels was great in that game. Now, also understand this. That was a home game for Washington. It's hard in any atmosphere, specifically a good team like Washington, to beat them on the road. The Eagles should have done that. They didn't. But I'm not going to be the one that says, Hurts got hurt in the first quarter. It doesn't matter at all. It absolutely does matter because Washington sure could have just rolled over in that football game, and they didn't and came back. So I take a lot of that. And also understand this. You are not getting crept up on Washington anymore at this point. This isn't the first playoff game where it's like, hey, man, rookies on the road, first playoff game. He's done that already. You don't think Vic Fangio and that Eagles defense is like, now hold on. That guy sunned us in the last game we just played and just went on the road and beat a viable opponent in Tampa Bay and a viable opponent in Detroit on the road. What makes you think that we're going to roll a helmet out here on Sunday afternoon and say, well, you can't do it three times in a row? No, you are looking at that Week 16 game. So the Eagles are not falling asleep on Washington. And with the performances that Washington has had the past 2 weeks, I'm definitely looking at that Week 16 game. It's like, you know what? You can't just bypass that as Jalen Hurts got injured that one. That's not fair to Washington.
I think it is relevant. I don't necessarily believe that it makes me have full confidence that the Commanders can continue to defy the odds on that regular season game. Based on the playoff performances these previous 2 weekends? Oh, absolutely. But Week 16, not really a part of my handicap. And it was that Eagles defensive coordinator, Vic Fangio, who said earlier this week, maybe a rookie based on birth certificate, but not rookie based on what the tape is telling us. They are not overlooking the Commanders, and nor should they, especially knowing Washington well. This will be the third meeting between the Eagles and the Commanders this season. DRS, it is really interesting, though, when you start to look at this game and remember what Week 16 had. Saquon Barkley had over 100 yards, I believe, in that opening quarter, but Jalen Hurts did exit with under 10 minutes remaining in that first quarter. The Commanders also turned the football over 5 times, and because Jaden Daniels threw for 5 touchdowns, they overcame that in thrilling and dramatic fashion. So it's not irrelevant, but I think what we have seen the previous 2 weekends in playoff atmospheres with the Commanders going on the road and defying the odds to win outright as an underdog is far more relevant than the familiarity or the recent game in the third to last weekend of the NFL regular season. Here is a question that I think is much more relevant to the overall scope of this game. Number two, DRS. How healthy does Jalen Hurts have to be for the Eagles to win on Sunday?
Functional. It's got to be functional, which means that if he needs to roll out of the pocket, he can do it. When he needs to take off, he can do that. He doesn't have to be Jalen Hurts. I'm coming into the NFL as a rookie, and I'm as fast as I'm ever going to be. Does that help if he can do that? Absolutely. And you also saw in the first quarter, Ben, before he got knocked out in that last game they played, he had 41 rushing yards. So he was on his way to probably 100-yard rushing day along with Saquon Barkley. You have to keep the defense honest, because the one thing the defense knows is if you're running RPO action with no threat to the quarterback, you're just going to seize on Saquon Barkley. But if he is functional in the pocket and can still pull that football out and make positive yards, that's going to help the Eagles. Now, granted, if he can't operate in the pocket, that's a detriment. And then you're going to look at Kenny Pickett, who played in that last game, where you lose some of that functionality by just being able to run the football and keeping the defense honest. But for me, he just has to be in there and somewhat healthy. Say, boy, that doesn't sound good, Donnie. You need him to go full go. Do you know who you trust most a lot here? Sometimes the odds makers. That line opened up, as you said, Ben, 4.5. It's 6.5 today. The odds makers are saying to themselves, you know what? I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal, and it looks like he is going to be healthy enough to play in this game. Otherwise, Ben, that 4.5 would have turned into 3.5s and 2.5s if they didn't have those beliefs there. So sometimes the smartest men in the room, I like to say, are the odds makers, and the odds makers are believing right now that the Philadelphia Eagles and Jalen Hurts will be functional, at least, at the very least, in the pocket.
How healthy does Jalen Hurts have to be for the Birds to win an NFC championship? As Donnie said, I already think he's healthy enough. I think the Eagles are going to win the NFC Championship game on Sunday. Cover, win by a touchdown, dominate the Commanders? I'm not entirely sure. But win said NFC Championship, I am not overly distraught based on the injury news we have received around Jalen Hurts. Today, practice will be interesting. I wouldn't read too much into it if he is a limited participant throughout at practice. Yeah, absolutely. And Donnie, I think a couple of numbers will be interesting. You can look at sicscore.com. I think Dr. Chow and his team do a really good job of breaking it down, right? We talk, all right, is he 80% healthy? Is he 95% effective? That six score assigned to individuals is out of 100. So if Jalen Hurts ends up being a 93, they'll be good to go. And then I think another number that will follow suit, 29.5 is the rushing yards prop for Jalen Hurts. He had more than 36, in fact, in the opening round playoff game for Philadelphia against Green Bay, his first action since that Week 16 regular season game against these Commanders. He had 44 on the opening touchdown run of that game on the first possession for the Birds. If Jalen Hurts is healthy or 90%, I think over 29.5 is a good bet. Are we going to have to wait and see? Of course, but I think that's how the Eagles dominate this game, as is reflected, DRS, by some of those prop numbers. Saquon Barkley's prop against Washington on Sunday afternoon at Lincoln Financial Field is 125.5. The Eagles are going to run the football effectively, and of course, the ground game is going to be a key component. Healthy Jalen Hurts, 75% Jalen Hurts, 95% Jalen Hurts or not.
Yeah, I tell you what's crazy about that, too, because you see that number, and it's so ridiculous. But is there one person out there, because that number's been posted now for about 48 hours, that is hammering the under? Because that number's not moving.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, you should have a instant, like, that's ridiculous of that price. But who's anxious to click under 125 based on what you've seen out of Saquon Barkley over the past couple weeks? And also know this. If a player like Jalen Hurts is healthy, you see that 29.5, because last week he opened at 37.5, got closer to the 40 number, hit that on the very first run for the touchdown, as you saw before the snow came in. I remember watching the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Denver Broncos in the AFC Championship game, where Ben Roethlisberger didn't throw a pass all week in practice. They didn't let anybody see it. Didn't even come out for pregame warmups. And the very first play of the game threw a bomb to, like, I don't know, Antonio Brown or whoever's the wide receiver on the team at that time. I was like, oh, I see the gamesmanship. So understand this. Like, Jalen Hurts, if you're looking at maybe even if you can get like a first quarter prop on Hurts for a rushing number, he is going to have to show the defense that he's active enough to run to put that in their mind. Because you're not going to come out and say the first two quarters, we're not going to run Jalen because we want to save him for the second half because we think he's banged up. Be on the lookout early for even one of the first 2 to 3 plays of the game where Hurts keeps it and runs it himself to let Washington know he's going to be fine, even if he actually isn't, Ben.
The numbers on Hurts are astoundingly low for a team that will be led by a quarterback is nearly a touchdown favorite. 179.5, the passing yards prop, 29 and a hook, the rushing yards number. Of course, all with the belief that he will not be fully healthy and effective come Sunday. But we shall see. DRS, we let you go now. We'll talk tomorrow on the early line. John Rothstein joins us up next for some college basketball conversation.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
This might be only January, but we are in the thick of conference action each and every night around the country in college basketball. So John Rothstein joins us now on this Wednesday on the Early Line on Sports Grid on behalf of FanDuel and, of course, doing some incredible work covering college hoops each and every day with CBS Sports. John, glad to have you here as always for a great Wednesday night slate ahead, looking back on a Tuesday around the nation as well.
Ben, great to be here. Great day to be alive.
It is certainly that. John, pretty much each and every night in the SEC, but especially it feels like on Tuesday the past few weeks, we have at least a top 5, top 10, or top 15 tilt to recap and give some reaction to. And that was the case last night in Knoxville. Sixth-ranked Tennessee hoping to bounce back from a weekend defeat against in-state foe Vanderbilt against number 14 Mississippi State. John, Tennessee was the last remaining undefeated team at the D1 level, a perfect 14-0, but entered last night's home game against the Bulldogs, losing two of their last four. They got back on track with a 12-point home win, 68-56, covering did the Vols as an 8.5-point home favorite. What was your main takeaway from what you saw last night in Knoxville?
Tennessee's a dominant home team in SEC play against really good opponents. You look right now at the three teams that Tennessee has played at home in SEC play: Mississippi State, Georgia, Arkansas. Two of the three, Mississippi State and Georgia, clearly in the NCAA tournament picture. And the Vols aren't just beating these teams at home. They are beating them by double figures with ease. And Ben, none of the three teams that Tennessee has played at home in SEC play have broken 60 points. And it brings up this question, which I want to pose to you. Are we underrating Rick Barnes's career as a head coach because he hasn't had maybe the March success that a lot of people desire in this vocation? We know that you are judged in terms of legacy, in terms of what you leave behind in the sport by what you do in the NCAA tournament. But the facts are the facts. Rick Barnes has taken Tennessee to new heights, did a great job at Providence, did a great job at Clemson. And at Texas, Rick Barnes was there 17 years. Ben, Texas in that span went to 17 tournaments, which we always know is most remembered by the 2003 team with TJ Ford that went to the Final Four and lost to who? Syracuse with Carmelo Anthony. Who can forget that 33-point, 14-rebound performance by Melo against Texas in the 2003 Final Four? I'm getting excited for March. I'm getting excited for April. But Ben, you know as well as I do, this is only January.
John, we like looking back on the previous two decades at Syracuse, not necessarily what is happening the previous few seasons in Central New York. But I think the point about Rick Barnes is sound, and it does seem the Volunteers will have a great opportunity to try to change that narrative this upcoming March for sure. So rinse, wash, repeat in the Southeastern Conference. Another top 20 duel tonight between Ole Miss and Texas A&M. John, you see a short spread in favor of the Running Rebs in Oxford, just about 3.5 points. What are we going to learn about these two teams coached by Buzz Williams and Chris Beard tonight?
Well, if a team is coached by Buzz Williams, it's a team that resembles a prize fighter. If it's a team that's coached by Chris Beard, it kind of resembles a tough welterweight. This is going to be as physical of a game as we've seen this year in the SEC, but it's also a showcase. It's a showcase for somebody that I think is the least appreciated transfer in college basketball, and that's Texas A&M Zurich Phelps. The transfer from SMU is leading the Aggies in scoring and was huge at bridging the gap a couple of weeks ago when All-American guard Wade Taylor IV was out of the lineup. And you have to remember this when you think about Texas A&M, where it was, where it is now, and then where it's going. Texas A&M returned 82.5% of its scoring from last year's team that went to the second round of the NCAA tournament and lost to Houston. We know that. We understand that. But Buzz Williams' portal class, and I wrote about this today in my daily column, the portal class of Pharrell Payne and CJ Wiltshire, who came off the bench Saturday against LSU to have 9 points in 15 minutes, elevates the ceiling in College Station. Ben, this is a poker game, and I'm shoving all my chips to the middle of the table. To quote the late, great New York Giant coach Jim Fossil, Texas A&M is final four good.
And I think I agree with you as well. What a matchup we have tonight in Oxford. What a Big East battle we have inside the world's most famous arena. That would be Madison Square Garden. St. John's, a top 20 team in the country and a 7.5-point favorite against Xavier. John, as you start to break down this matchup tonight inside the Garden, what is a key positional battle to keep an eye on?
Well, you have to start, obviously, with the news. Rick Pitino told me about 3 hours ago that St. John's guard Davon Smith is out for tonight's game due to a lingering shoulder injury. This is something that's going to have a major impact on the Red Storm's depth. And look, Xavier changed the course of its season on Saturday by beating Marquette in Milwaukee. And if you're looking at the Musketeers right now and you're looking at their long-term prognosis, I know that we are still weeks away from Selection Sunday. It is 7 weeks from this Sunday. But the facts are the facts. If Xavier goes to Madison Square Garden and beat St. John's on the road tonight, the Musketeers are firmly in the bubble picture and may even be, when you break out the fine-tooth comb, like a CPA on April 14th, on the right side of the bracket.
So, John, let me ask you about that bracket quickly here in the final minute as we focus on Rick Pitino and the Red Storm. Last NCAA tournament appearance for St. John's, 2019. Last NCAA tournament win for the Johnnies, 2000. Is this the year under Rick Pitino that all changes?
I think so. And I think when we look at, you know, the big term, the long term history right now of St. John's basketball program, this program has been mostly irrelevant for 25 years, has not won a double A tournament game since 2000. How long ago is that? Jay Wright was still the head coach at Hofstra. But beyond that, St. John's enters tonight's game against Xavier in sole possession of first place in the Big East. The last time the Red Storm program won at least a share of a Big East regular season title, the 91-92 season. The last season for Lou Carnesecca as head coach.
John Rothstein, it is always a pleasure. We're on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here, ending out 3 hours on a Wednesday morning on the early line on Sports Grid. I'm Ben Stevens. Let's go around the country in college basketball on a great Wednesday night slate in men's college hoops, as always. Some of the marquee matchups we broke down with John Rothstein, and that continues in the SEC. Can South Carolina play spoiler tonight at home against top five Florida? The Gators now an 11.5-point favorite. The line early on this Wednesday working even more in favor of UF. But winning on the road in SEC play, always something to keep an eye on. In the Big 12, I'm not so sure. I do believe this game has been changed in terms of destination. Let me check on that, because there was so much snow in the South this week that I think they changed where the game was being played between Houston and Utah, but maybe not. Regardless, the Cougs, a 19.5-point favorite, top 10 in the country once again, expected to handle the Utes tonight. Kansas now just a 5.5-point favorite in Fort Worth, taking on TCU. The Jayhawks, 8 Big 12 losses a season ago, the most since the late 80s. They have stumbled a few times out of the gate so far here in Big 12 play. Got beat soundingly in a top 10 tilt last week in Ames against Iowa State. Dropped their Big 12 opener against West Virginia. Here's a really intriguing one. Arkansas in Georgia. Basically a pick'em price tonight in Bud Walton, which should stand out just seeing that 1.5 spread. Of course, first year with John Calipari in Fayetteville, and the Hogs are winless, 0-5 in SEC play. John Rothstein told you about Davon Smith, the outstanding St. John's guard, out for tonight's matchup for the Red Storm against Xavier. John also breaking some news last night that Boogie Flan, star point guard for Arkansas, out for the remainder of this season with a hand injury. That is not good news for Coach Cal and his Razorbacks. Georgia was ranked last week. They lost, now out of the top 25, but Mike White still is a really good team in UGA. They kept it close against Auburn on Saturday. I bet on Georgia plus 6.5, and they did end up losing to the Tigers at home, but still pretty good. Asa Newell, one of the better bigs in all of the SEC. Will Arkansas show some resolve without their point guard Boogie Flan, or will his absence lead to a sixth consecutive loss in SEC action for Arkansas? And a couple of Big Ten battles where the home teams are a 5.5 point favorite. Northwestern, competitive basketball games. Two consecutive OT thrillers last week. Winning in overtime at home last week against Maryland in Welsh Ryan. And then on the road, taking Michigan to an extra session on Sunday afternoon in Ann Arbor. And that should tell you all you need to know about this Indiana basketball program. They win an OT on Friday night against Ohio State. But things are not great for IU as of this moment. They are catching 5.5 points in Evanston. Nebraska last week had its 20-game home win streak in Lincoln come to a close courtesy of Rutgers. Can the Huskers bounce back tonight? They have also lost four straight. I'm somewhat of a jinx to Cornhusker basketball at this moment. They were playing great after a home victory over UCLA two weekends ago. They had the second best win percentage in the Big Ten dating back to February of 2023, only behind Purdue. I shared out these illustrious stats. Nebraska has dropped four in a row. So I am hoping the Huskers and my own personal jinx on them tonight. I did bet Nebraska last night when the line was 4.5. I do believe home floor advantage inside the vault. Pinnacle Bank Arena will be a difference tonight against Southern Cal and those Trojans. So that is around the nation tonight in college basketball. Tuesday night was great. It should be fantastic once again. I do want to mention St. John's rather quickly. You saw that plus 150 price on the Red Storm to win the Big East. Record-wise, standings-wise, Rick Pitino's Red Storm in first, but not the favorite to win the Big East Conference as of this moment. It remains Marquette. John told you, Xavier, upset-minded, beat the Golden Eagles in Milwaukee. The Musketeers will look to do the same tonight under Sean Miller inside Madison Square Garden, but second-best price on the Johnnies to win the Big East. Marquette remains the favorite at plus 120. Of course, UConn should be in the fold as well. That does it for a Wednesday on the Early Line. We're back tomorrow, Thursday, bright and early, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, live right here on Sports Grid. Talk to you then.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
During the Right Rug Flooring Anniversary Sale, we're celebrating 91 years of the guaranteed lowest prices. With beautiful carpet with a lifetime stain warranty starting at $219 a square foot installed with pad. And luxury vinyl starts at $399 a square foot installed. Unbeatable prices and 24-month special financing available with approved credit. Schedule a free in-home appointment with our flooring experts at RITERUG.com. Right Rug Flooring's Anniversary Sale.
Right Rug.